Welcome to another edition of the Newsroom Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Buist, and today we have a special extended version of the podcast. But first, a warning. Today's podcast contains mature themes and strong language. On December 5th, 2016, Billy Coomer stood in front of Justice Tony Skirica in a Hamilton courtroom and made a very unusual request. At the time, Billy was 46 years old. With the exception of a couple of months of freedom scattered here and there, sometimes earned, occasionally because he was on the lam, he had spent nearly all of the past 30 years in prison. Even by the standards of the sketchy-looking criminal flotsam that drifts through the John Sopinka courthouse on any given day, Billy's outlandish appearance is breathtaking. His shaved skull is completely covered with tattoos, including the words Steel City inked prominently above his forehead. It's his own little homage to Hamilton, which he adopted as his home around the age of 14. He has tattooed gun barrels that mimic thick sideburns running down either side of his face. His throat and neck are fully covered in ink, as are both arms. The more disturbing tattoos are hidden under his shirt, a few swastikas here and there, the words white power across his belly, white pride in big letters across his back, and the word insane across his lower back. He says he's not a white supremacist, and he says those were youthful mistakes he now regrets. Billy has lived a life of near constant, almost unimaginable violence from the time he was a boy. On top of that, he became a heroin addict in jail. That he survived this long is a minor miracle in itself. His body is a real-life version of the kids' game Operation. He has two bullet wounds, one in his leg, one in his bicep, from a failed hit on him. He has numerous stab wounds across his torso, a healed-over hole in his rib cage where a tube was inserted to drain his lungs, and he's once been put in a coma. He has a heart murmur, liver damage, nerve damage to his legs, and holes in his esophagus from acid reflux that went unrepaired for a long time.
I've been piped, I've been stabbed, I've been shot, I've been poisoned, I've been jumped.
As he stood before Justice Skirica, Billy had just pleaded guilty to armed robbery, assault, and a few other charges. He knew the Crown was seeking a sentence of 15 to 20 years, which would have been the longest single stretch he's ever faced inside. Billy decided he wanted no part of that.
I'm not coming out 65, 70 years old. Trying to figure life out. I can't figure it out right now, Larissa. It's not happening. I said, I know how to survive in here, and I know this society in here, and I'm so institutionalized. It ain't funny.
So Billy begged the judge to send him to prison for the rest of his life. Justice Skirica's response was just as extraordinary. He said no. I have seen people who are absolutely evil, Skirica told the court, and Billy wasn't one of them. The judge gave him 12 years, told him he could be out in six, and that he should use the next few years to figure out how to become a productive citizen when he is eventually released. You're not irredeemable yet, Skirica told him. Those words struck Billy like a thunderclap. A life changer, he now says.
Like I said, it was the kindest words that anybody's ever used on me, especially in a courtroom.
As he stood there absorbing Skirica's words, Billy kept whispering to himself softly over and over, I'm not irredeemable. I'm not irredeemable. I'm not irredeemable. He almost seemed amazed, said his lawyer, Larissa Fedak of Hamilton. The fact that somebody who is an authority like a judge told him he's not irredeemable is going to sit with him to try to at least make a plan, she said. She's been Billy's lawyer for more than two decades now. She still thinks he is redeemable. She thinks that he's very tired of doing the same things over and over again. And she actually calls him one of her favorite clients. A smart, articulate, funny man with a lot of potential, despite what his bizarre appearance and violent history might suggest. He's a survivor, she says. Every part of his DNA is a survivor. If you were in a war and there was no food and no homes, no weapons, you would want Billy on your side, she said. You'd put him in charge of the fort because he would figure it out. And if you were part of his side, he would protect you. For the first time, Billy now believes he has a chance at redemption. Skirica's words, he says, have given him hope.
I just didn't believe in myself at all. Like, I just felt like there's no hope for me, and that I'm not going to, things ain't going to change, and I ain't going to be able to figure out how to change it or anything like that. But now, I believe I can.
The odds aren't great, admittedly, but this may prove to be a tale of redemption like few others. One day, Billy dreams of visiting high school kids or kids in trouble so he can tell them his story as a cautionary tale. Then again, this may prove to be just another wasted chance, one of many that have littered Billy's life. And you don't have to go far to find one skeptic. Billy's oldest daughter, Ashley, scoffs at any talk of redemption, saying her father is nothing more than a manipulator. She says it from her heart, he's not going to change. She hopes she's wrong, though. I love this guy so much, she said, but at the end of the day, I just know he's going to die in jail. It pains her to say it, but Ashley thinks that it would be the best for everyone if her dad had got his wish and stayed in jail for the rest of his life. Do you know how many people want to kill him? She said. He's safe in there, she says, and society's safe with him in there too. Billy Coomer is clearly a broken person. Much of the damage is self-inflicted, but not all of it. Billy grew up in subsidized housing near Lawrence and Kingston Roads in Scarborough. He says he suffered from ADHD and was enrolled in classes for special needs children. Around grades 7 and 8, Billy alleges he was molested repeatedly by a teacher, who was later charged with a number of offenses against other students. That's when a lot of my trouble started, Billy says. When he tried to tell his parents about the abuse, he alleges they swept it under the carpet. Billy's parents could not be reached for comment. Things didn't go much better when he reached high school. He says he was having an ongoing dispute with one of his teachers, and he told his father. His dad told him that if he didn't like what was happening, he should go do something about it. So one day, Billy says, he clocked the teacher with a crowbar during class. That got him kicked out of school. By that point, around the age of 14 or 15, he said his relationship with his father was deteriorating to the point where he really feared him.
My dad's relationship was really deteriorating, like, to the point I really feared him. He was a big man, like, he's like 6'5", always ranging from like 350 to 400 pounds, and he was really aggressive on his approach on me. So I was pretty intimidated by him. So I got tired and tired of being scared of living in that environment.
Billy took off to Hamilton to live with an acquaintance of his mother. He decided he was done with school, so he found a few odd jobs, started living with some friends around James Street North, and then drifted into criminal activity, stealing cars and such. On the second night Billy ever spent in jail, he says he watched a tough guy across the way tie up his cellmate, stuff his clothes full of newspaper, and light him on fire.
And I remember standing there staring and watching the fire go and hearing the kids screaming and going, wow, where am I? I don't want that to happen to me.
When he arrived at Maplehurst Correctional Complex in Milton, shortly after that, all of the inmates in his block jammed his cell, beat him, and stabbed him with pencils. It was a test to see if he would break down or ask to be moved. At the time, Billy had a black girlfriend, and he put pictures of her up on his cell wall. He admits that caused him some problems. Some of the black guys on the range didn't like that and told him to take the pictures down. Billy refused. One guy in particular took offense. He was built like a bodybuilder and hit like a truck, Billy says, and he began dishing out regular beatings for more than a year that Billy says he just absorbed without retaliating. Finally, a tough inmate from Ottawa took Billy under his wing, told him he'd have to start fighting back, and began teaching him how to lift weights and fight. One New Year's Eve, Billy's not sure of the year, but it was somewhere in the late 1980s, he was allowed to go home for a few days to visit his parents. As he was heading out the door, some of the other inmates handed him $800 and told him to bring back some drugs. And if he didn't bring them back, he was going to be beaten on his return. Someone he knew helped him get a bunch of vials of hash oil and 100 hits of acid. His next problem was how to get them back into jail. Billy decided to make packages of the drugs and swallowed them, waited for them to pass through his system, and then he fished them out of his feces. As his reward, he was given a couple of the vials and 20 hits of acid. He had them on his bed, and the big guy who had been tormenting him came to his cell to try to take the drugs. Billy refused again. The guy socked him hard in the head. The inmate who had been training Billy saw him with a towel wrapped around his swollen head, found out what had happened, and frustrated, he told him, "If you don't go deal with that, I'm beating you."
I'm like, man, in my head, I'm thinking, does this nightmare ever stop? Like,
yeah, really?
please, just leave me alone. Let me do my thing.
Billy found his bully taking a shower.
I walked in, boom, I hit him with a shot, and he started screaming, ah, help. And I was like, what? I've been taking beatings from you for a year and a half, and you're a coward. So I just jumped on, started beating him and beating him and beating him and beating him.
For good measure, he then went to the cell of the bully's best friend and beat him senseless as well.
Now I'm the big cool kid. It's like, oh, Coomer, you know, you don't want to mess with Coomer. He's a tough guy.
By the time Billy was in his early 20s, life settled into a familiar pattern. Jail, a short time back on the streets of Hamilton, a crime spree, then back to jail. It seems my luck always runs out quick, Billy said with a laugh. During the short times he was out, Billy fathered three children in quick succession. Inside prison, the fights and the violence escalated, and Billy's reputation as a fearsome fighter grew. He was making a name for himself, and his workout regime gave him a chiseled, imposing physique to match.
Yeah, there is a lot of violence, and you're always preparing yourself for violence. And I've always seemed to put myself in position of always being in a max, and in that center, like, I don't know, man, I'm this always stupid, like I'm like a magnet. It just sucks to me. And
the fights are an incredible adrenaline rush when they're happening, Billy said, but they're also frightening, especially if you're on the losing end.
It's scary, though. Any fight, I don't care what anybody says, anytime you approach a fight, I always worry. It's like, you know, whether you're going to lose, and the part of losing is how far is that person going to take it on you? You know, that's the scary part. Especially in prison, like, because you don't know if the person's going to want to just take it to the point of killing you. Or
if they're a lifer anyways, what have they got to lose, you know?
And, and then there's some people that ain't even lifers that just don't give a shit.
Right.
Because there was a point in my time in my first pen bet, I got it to a point in my head where I didn't care. And if we had beef, I was going in for the kill.
Around 1993, Billy discovered that someone he cared about had become addicted to drugs. Something inside him snapped. He says he decided from that point forward he'd stop committing crimes against businesses and random people, and instead he'd exact vengeance against drug dealers in Hamilton. He started with one dealer who was supplying crack to the person close to him. Billy found him, tied him up, and beat him with a baseball bat. He then targeted other dealers, basically daring them to go to police and report the assaults. Finally, one did, and Billy was sent to Kingston Penitentiary for 2 years. His first ever stint in a federal maximum security prison. Billy didn't last long at KP the first time. When a sex offender was brought onto his range, Billy welcomed him by bursting into his cell and beating him. Billy was transferred to nearby Collins Bay Institution, and he was going to be put in one block. He was ecstatic.
So I went to Collins Bay to one block, which was at that time was considered gladiator school, and that's where the who's of the who's were. And, you know, you wanted to make a name for yourself. This is where you come to make a name for yourself. So I was all, at that time, I was ecstatic. I was all happy. I was like, yeah, I'm going to Collins Bay. I'm going to one block, and they're going to know who the fuck I am. And, yeah, sure enough, they knew who the fuck I was, like a big fool. I played right into the games of things and got caught up in all the crap. Like, that's when I started getting my tattoos.
By this point in his life, Billy says that he now realizes he was failing miserably.
I was too much of an idiot, as I put it now. I was too selfish and ignorant to get my shit together to man up to be a father, you know? Time to grow up, pull your big boy pants on, and be the father you're supposed to be, and that you say you want to be, and do whatever it takes to be that father.
Right.
But I didn't. I was like, okay, well, I'll go and commit crimes and fend for my kids. And I always put it in my head that, oh, you're not going to get caught. You're going to get the big one, and you can move on and retire. But that never, ever happens, you know?
Right.
Like, that just never, ever happens. And, you know, I was just a not-too-bright kid that was sexually abused at a very young age and then ran to the streets to try to figure life out and did what I was taught in the streets, criminally wise.
Right.
And just continued that throughout my life. And all I did was keep digging my hole deeper and deeper and giving me a violent record and
right.
And just making my whole life and situation uncontrollable and undesirable in the law's eyes. And
Mill Haven, KP, Collins Bay, Guelph Correctional Center, the Lindsay Super Jail, Billy cycled from one prison to the next. What do we all want? A nice family, a job, a car, a house, said Larissa Fedak, his longtime lawyer. I saw over time that whole idea slipping away from him, she says. He just barely believed it when I first met him, and that was over 20 years ago, but he just lost it over time. He just closed the door on it slowly, she says. She sees the exaggerated inking of his body as a mask he uses to hide his vulnerability. He's created this outside facade that no one can see inside and hurt him, she says. The way he presents himself to the world is there's very little expectation of anything good in him. He'd rather just have everyone give up on him so he can finally give up completely on himself, she says. When Billy was released from yet another prison stint in 2003, he returned to Hamilton, but by now he was addicted to heroin and cocaine. A lot happened during this short stretch of freedom. For one thing, Billy alleges he was being slowly poisoned by someone who was mixing cyanide into his drugs. He ended up in Hamilton General Hospital, and the doctor told him that, luckily, whoever was feeding him the cyanide wasn't giving it to him in large enough doses, Billy alleges. You've kind of grown immune to it, the doctor said. On another occasion, he got a call from someone at 2 a.m. asking Billy to come over. He had a bad feeling, but he just wrote it off. When he walked in, the guy had a gun pointed at Billy. Shaking, the guy said, "This ain't personal." Then he shot Billy in the leg. He grabbed the railing of the stairwell, he kind of wobbled, and then boom, he got shot again, this time in the bicep. On the third attempt, the gun jammed. Then it jammed again, and the guy dropped the gun. Bleeding from two bullet wounds, Billy picked the gun up and started beating the guy with his own weapon. That's when the guy told Billy he was supposed to be carrying out a hit on behalf of a Hamilton criminal organization. During this time, Billy also continued his alleged one-man war on drug dealers. Now, it's also possible, by the way, that Billy's self-described vengeance against drug dealers may have been nothing more than vicious attempts by him to obtain drugs for his own use. He says he tied up one victim at a crack house on Kenilworth Avenue and beat him with a roofing hammer for hours on end. He said he messed the guy up pretty good. He broke bones and stuff like that. When Billy finally left, he says the victim got in his car and tried to drive away, but he was weaving all down the street. Police stopped him and were horrified by what they saw. The officers asked the guy if Billy Coomer had done this to him, and according to Billy, the victim said, "I don't know. All I know is that I don't want to be on the other end of his angry stick again." But one of the other people in the crack house identified Billy to police, and he ended up at a maximum security prison in New Brunswick. By this point, his criminal record was up to 35 convictions. As that sentence was coming to a close, Billy escaped from a halfway house and fled to St. John for a time. That put his very recognizable face on the news in Atlantic Canada as a fugitive until he was picked up and shipped back to prison. He was eventually released on October 29, 2015, and he returned to Hamilton. And once again, it didn't take him long to find trouble. By now, the story starts to sound a little monotonous. Billy went back to his life in the gutter of hard drugs and crack houses. Then he decided to go after another guy he deemed to be an undesirable. Billy and two accomplices staged a home invasion at a place near Emerald and Barton Streets. They tied the guy up while Billy brandished a replica handgun. What Billy didn't know was that his victim had a security camera running that night, and the whole thing had been caught on video. The police showed up, Billy ran, and they grabbed him near Barton Street and St. Matthews Avenue. Still, Billy nearly beat this one. He'd had the foresight to use a special type of makeup designed to conceal tattoos. He had covered himself in it, so the man caught in the video footage bore a resemblance to Billy, but without his distinctive tattoos. And it almost worked, until the Crown hired a video technician. He enhanced the video enough that the outlines of Billy's tattoos could be seen in the images. The jig was up. A plea deal was pulled off the table, and the Crown was now looking for 15 to 20 years as a sentence. That's when Billy decided he didn't want to ever come out again. He told his lawyer to either get him a life sentence or get him 5 years to run consecutively for each of the 7 charges he was facing. He figured the 35 years in total would be the same as a life sentence, given his age and health issues. He didn't want to be walking out of prison, he says, trying to figure life out and be stuck with nothing or nobody. The Billy Coomer who shuffles into the Millhaven interview room looks far different than the heavily muscled man that can be seen in earlier photos. Billy has lost a significant amount of weight because of his various health ailments in recent years. He's also clearly weary from the toll his poor choices have taken on his body and his mind.
I've lived a life inside a system, and a violent one.
Right.
And I went from being a sexually abused young man into the system, and I've just been abused mentally and physically throughout my whole history, and have abused people physically and mentally. I got my head's messed up, and I got problems, and this is the only way I know how to survive. So, like, really, well, who have I become in life? Nobody. I became, all I'm known for is to being a drug addict, a jack boy, who jacks drug dealers, and I've put my life and other people's lives around me at risk because of the lifestyle I've lived, and caused myself to live in prisons for the last 29 friggin' years of my life.
You tired of it? Have you reached the end?
Oh, I've done it. It's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
I was done my last sentence. I was just stupid to fall back into the grind that I slipped back into the grind that I once lived before.
Yeah.
Because I let my hurt and anger get the better of me.
And yet, for a person who looks as menacing as he does, with the violent history he has, the words love and caring and understanding come up a lot more than expected when Billy talks. In 2012, when he was in prison in New Brunswick, he received a letter from his oldest daughter, Ashley, completely out of the blue. "My heart kind of stopped," he said. He wrote her back, they started talking by phone, and then she came to visit him at the halfway house out east, the first time he had seen her since she was a baby. "There were tears," he says, "really emotional and really good. It felt so good to have my daughter in my arms and to feel the love," he says. But the connection didn't last, though, and they've drifted apart again. They both give different reasons for the estrangement, and they both sound hurt and angry about it. "I love my dad, I do," says Ashley, "but I don't love the decisions he's made in life." Billy's relationship with his own parents is just as complicated. He says it's been more than a decade since he's had contact with them. "I love them, they're my parents," he says, "but it's not deep. If they died, I guess it would bother me." During his last bit of freedom in Hamilton, Billy met a woman named Corey Adams when her family offered to take him in and give him a place to stay. They're engaged now, and Billy says she's a big reason why he's determined to follow Justice Skirica's advice. So far, she's stuck by him. It's just a few months into his latest prison stint, but Billy insists he's already a changed man. For one thing, he says he's off street drugs now, and he's adhering to a methadone program to help him kick his heroin addiction. He's getting counseling, and he's trying to upgrade his education.
I pray to God every day to give me the strength and the will and the want and ability to move forward out of this world that I've lived in and get myself out of these way of thinking the thoughts of this dark, deep, demented world I've created for myself.
Yeah.
Nobody else has created it for me but me. Yes, okay, I was taken advantage of when I was a kid, and then I put myself in a system that where I got taken advantage of for a lot of years. I should have changed my ways years ago. Like, I should have, where I'm at now in life, I wish I had the brain and the know-how and the ability to want to change earlier in life so that I didn't waste all these years behind these bars and throw it all away and throw a relationship with my kids and all that stuff away. That could have been a great, wonderful thing that I could enjoy and they could enjoy with one another, and rather than trying to be somebody in prison that in the end you're absolutely nobody but a fucking loser surrounded by losers, and I'm tired of being that loser and I'm tired of playing this loser game. Like, there's nothing cool about prison. That one time I thought this shit was cool. There's nothing cool about it at all.
Will this time be different? Who knows? It's been 30 years with no sign yet that Billy's figured things out. Then again, his lawyer says, he's made it this far against all odds. She's searching for a good analogy and finally settles on the example of one of nature's hardiest creatures imaginable, as unflattering as the comparison might seem. "You know how you can step on a cockroach and they never die?" says Fedak. "Billy's tough like that. I've got a few of them, and you just can't kill them." For the Newsroom Insider podcast, I'm Steve Buist of the Hamilton Spectator. Thanks for listening.